CRM was built backwards. Here's what I mean.
Oh, I love that. Go ahead.
It was built for sales leaders as a management tool. So leadership has to flog and beat the heck out of and threaten the salespeople to put in the information so that they can get the visibility that they're looking for in the business. Had they built it to make the salesperson better, then all of the data would be in there and they'd get the result that they want. It mirrors sales. This is what I need, right? I show up with my commission breath and I tell you the deal that I need to get. I'm not getting that deal. It's the same thing. If I show up with my software and I'm like, I need you to put in this stuff for me. Nobody cares about that. That's not going to happen. But when I show up for the customer, I'm like, I'm here for you. I'm here to help you get what you want. We win. And if we build software for the person that's using that software to make them better, to help them thrive, to be two or three times better than they are by themselves, magically, all the data's in the system. And we have all the visibility we ever wanted in leadership.
I do so much sales training myself. And I literally, whenever I walk in a room, I write on the board, nobody cares. That's the first thing I write. Nobody cares.
And now the man you've been waiting for, John, the sales machine, Rankin!
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is the founder and CEO of Sales Success Media, a platform for sales professionals to improve their skills. He also hosts the Sales Success Stories podcast, where he interviews top performing sales professionals from all over the world to uncover their secrets. He is the author of the book, Sales Success Stories. His book, Sales Success Stories, is a collection of 60 individual tales from 20 of the top 1% sales professionals in the world. An active practitioner himself, he serves as an account director at Relationship One, where he helps empower organizations to modernize their marketing through strategy, technology, and data. Please welcome to the show, Scott Ingram.
It's a heck of an intro, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you know, what's really motivating to me, Scott, is not just that you are a sales and marketing professional with more than 20 years experience and how you've worked with companies that even exited and sold Oracle, is that even now you maintain a $3 million sales pipeline this year.
That's it. Well, more than a $3 million pipeline. I've maintained a $3 million quota. So you got to have a little bit more pipeline than you do actual revenue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about how you manage a pipeline and what is your pipeline at? Because I know you're doing over $3 million in sales just yourself.
Yeah, so I've been with this organization for the last 8 years. So Relationship One is my day job. I work with predominantly Fortune 500 organizations that are leveraging large-scale enterprise marketing automation solutions, primarily from Oracle. I used to work with Eloqua. We went public. We were a public company for one whole quarter before Oracle acquired us. And then I now work with my favorite professional services partner in that space. Fortunately, you know, a lot of people, they look for a pipeline coverage that's maybe two to three times their quota. I probably average just shy of two times because I've been at this a really long time and my close ratio is really high. So I don't have to have quite the giant pipeline because I don't lose a whole lot, right? I'm probably winning 50 to 60% of the opportunities that I put in that pipe.
And let's talk about the products that you're actually selling as far as the software and what's in your, you say you win most of the time, more than half of the time, and your competitors.
Yeah. So, I mean, the product I'm selling is actually people, right? So we are a professional services firm that is helping implement software. So typically we are working alongside Oracle or Adobe or Salesforce or other organizations to help them sell their solution in a way where they can make the commitment to their customers that not only are we going to give you a world-class solution, we're actually going to make sure that it gets implemented in your organization so that you get world-class results. So that's what my team is doing. My team is really helping those organizations adopt that software, get it integrated within their business, do all the training, all of those types of things. So it's a very collaborative type of approach, right? We're co-selling with software sellers to improve their win rates. So I want to make them more successful. And then as we do that, those folks become our clients and frequently long-term clients. I have clients, many of which that you've likely heard of, right? These are Fortune 50, Fortune 100 scale organizations that I've worked with for many years.
Yeah, I get it. So software integration. So currently the Sales Machine, what we do is we do the integration ourselves, but ultimately our methodology of scaling is software integrators. Funny enough, it's not only a collaborative effort, but everyone can win, right? And I love that aspect of making sales. So, you know, Zig Ziglar always says, you know, number one sales is service, right? And number two, it's solving problems and making sure that people are satisfied. So I love that. And what's the biggest deal you've ever done?
So actually one of the biggest deals I ever did, when I think about kind of lifetime value and really, really significant margins, before going to Eloqua was actually my second IPO. I worked for an organization before that called Bizarre Voice. And most people have experienced Bizarre Voice in the ratings and reviews that they see on very large retail websites or large manufacturer websites. I did a deal with them that with a large digital camera manufacturer that you absolutely would have heard of. And I set them up to be I basically set up the journey for the first step of bringing them to a level where they were a seven-figure a year ARR client. And I believe they're still a client today. That was a deal I probably did 10 years ago. So you think about the total value of that opportunity. What was really fun about that deal was not only did I set that trajectory, we delivered on the rest of it, and I recruited the guy who ended up taking over that account after I set it up on that initial trajectory. And the results that they got, I mean, the impact to their business, I mean, the revenue to the Bizarre Voice was absolutely huge, but I think the impact to that particular client was orders of magnitude more. And that's ultimately what you want, right? My favorite Zig Ziglar quote is, if you help enough other people get what they want, you'll get everything that you want. And I think that is so core and so key to success in sales.
I like to tell companies that your vision of sales is my mission. It's what's key for me. And I build and scale sales teams, Scott, like I've been doing it for 30 years. I don't know anything else. The Sales Machine is a software, a total sales software solution to be a sales machine for other people's businesses. And for me, talking to my own salespeople, I'm like, look, this whole thing is not about us making sales. It's about how we can help the companies make more sales with our solution. That's what's powerful, when we can come from that place and that space and become their sales machine in their business and allow them to grow. Let's go back to the pipeline, because you have a very unique ability to actually build and scale a company with sales and marketing, right? So talk to me about, what are the things that people need to do that are real and relevant right now to grow their marketing and generate leads? And then we want to talk about what not to do, because there's a lot of false prophets out there selling everything that you can imagine as far as marketing. I mean, marketing agencies that have been in business since yesterday with enormous, enormous amounts of testimonials, but they don't know what they're doing. So let's talk about that. And how do you maintain your pipeline?
So, you know, one of my favorite book titles of all time, John Jantz, who a lot of people know because he wrote the Duct Tape Marketing book series. He wrote a book called Think Like a Marketer, Sell Like a Rockstar. And that is really foundational to my approach, right? At the end of the day, most of my customers are marketers. So it helps a lot for me to put myself in their shoes and to think like they do and think about the things that they do in terms of, you know, primarily their job is how do we create opportunities? How do we help create and contribute to pipeline for our sales organization? But marketing by itself doesn't close deals, right? You really have to take that sales first type of approach. And I think in this day and age, there's so much technology and it's so easy to scale bad. It's so easy to do a lot of volume, to spray and pray, to send these undifferentiated messages. And the opportunity in that is it's really easy to stand above because there is so much just mediocrity out there. I mean, John, you're a perfect example. I get so much generic garbage outreach because of my podcast, people wanting to come on the show or people wanting me to come on their shows. And it's find and replace, right? I could put anybody else's name in that spot. Your outreach was thoughtful. You actually knew who I was, what I was about, what the value I was going to bring to your show was. It's that little bit of research and humanity and just showing, hey, I see you. I see the unique challenge that you're trying to solve for. That's the way that we really connect, that you really break through and make that impact. The other thing that I would say is we have lost sight of, again, because of all of the technology, we've lost sight of the opportunity to leverage relationships. It is so much easier to get business done if you can be introduced, if you get referred into an opportunity. So most of my pipeline, I do very, very, very little cold outreach because I've been in this space for a long time. I've built this incredible set of relationships, both with the software vendors that we co-sell with, but also with my customers. And one of the things that you see in building great customer relationships over time, and that means delivering on what you promised when you sold something to them, when you develop that level of relationship, a couple of things happen. One, in this day and age, people move around, right? They get promoted. They move to another organization and they take a higher role. I'm the first person they call when they walk into a situation where their marketing technology is messed up, right? Because they know we're going to deliver. They're going to get what I told them they were going to get when they signed with us. So it's an automatic deal when they make those types of moves, right? They also are incredible advocates to either peers in the organization. Again, I work with very, very large organizations. So it's common for me to work with one division or one geography or one business unit and then deliver for them and be referred to other geographies or other business units or other groups. I've got a very large client that we've worked with for years. They made some huge acquisitions in the last year or two. And so as they're assimilating those organizations, they're bringing them onto their platforms and their systems. Those folks are going, holy crud, we don't know how to run this stuff. And they go, oh, that's, don't even worry about it. We've got the greatest vendor ever. Let me introduce you to Scott, and they're going to take care of it. Very few, this is why my win rate is so high. Very few of my opportunities are competitive because of that dynamic. I don't even need to look at anybody else, right? There's that level of trust and that ability and that proven track record of delivering that it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to work together.
It's all about relationships. You know, I've had relationships with some of my own people and clients for more than 20 years. And you don't hear that very often anymore. A lot of people are just making offers and they're one and done, what I call one night stands. Right? It's not sustainable. It's not scalable. And so they're constantly looking for the next thing, rather than getting good at one thing.
John, you mentioned a really important dynamic that I think so many people overlook. You talked about the relationships you have with the people on your team. So on my Sales Success Stories podcast, as you mentioned in the intro, I only interview number one and top 1% individual contributors. When I talk to folks who are at the absolute top of their game in enterprise sales, right, selling huge deals to huge organizations, more than 50% of that effort is managing the relationships and coordinating the people inside their own organization. More than half of the sales effort is internal. And you can't do that. You can't organize a large, complex organization like Oracle, like Microsoft, if you don't have those relationships internally. But here's the thing. Here's what you're actually delivering as a sales professional. The value that you bring to your client is, I have all of these resources for you. I can marshal the very best of this gigantic organization to specifically serve you and specifically deliver on the value and what you're looking to achieve within your business and even professionally, right? One of my biggest wins, I know you love your intros and you get juice from that. One of the things I love doing is helping people advance their careers. Right? It's why I have this sales community. It's why I love surrounding myself with top sales professionals, because I want to see them succeed and get to higher levels. When I work with my clients, I want them to be able to deliver incredible results to their organization that they are intensely promotable. Right? My best relationships are with folks. I've got a gentleman at a Fortune, my God, 10 or 20 healthcare organization. When I started working with him, he was a marketing manager. He's now a senior level VP in that same organization. And he got there because of the value that he was able to demonstrate to his organization at each level as he got promoted again and again and again and again. And I'm proud to say it was my team that helped him deliver a lot of those results, right? It's the most gratifying thing there ever is, right? It's one thing to say, oh, we generated millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars for this organization. That's fun, right? But it's more important to know that I made a difference for that guy and his family, and he has six kids. So I know I made a difference.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I call it leading from behind. So, you know, early on in my career, I was on stage a lot. We do, you know, quarterly leaders meetings. We do quarterly rewards, recognition, competition, compensation nights. And we'll spend a full day or two doing it. And I've done it for 30 years. That's a long time. Actually, I think about it. But, you know, after about 7 years of being on the stage and getting the accolades myself and the awards. And, you know, I was given a Piaget watch as a vice president. You know, something inside me just flipped, right? And I got juiced more about my own success than I got more juiced about other people's success and my team's success and watching them until, I bought out the organization. And then we incorporated car programs. We incorporated house programs. You know, more and more, I just kept moving backwards to the back of the stage because my people took over and have ran it for years. And I stay involved. And that's why I created the Sales Machine. I literally got to a point where I was dropping the ball and my people were dropping the ball. Like, you know, due to innovation and outdated products, outdated systems, we needed innovation, outdated training, right? And so that's I went to some of the biggest tech companies in the world, and you know NetSuite, Salesforce, HubSpot, Zoho, even signed up for them. But my people wouldn't use the technology. I'm like, look, you have to understand the psychology of the salesperson, the methodology, put that into technology, and then they'll rock and roll. They'll know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. But you got to have rewards, recognition, competition, compensation. It's got to be automated and simple for the user. And they didn't get it. And I'm like, come on, this is what you guys do. And I realized that a lot of CRMs are just a digital address book. They really don't move the needle. They don't grow people.
CRM was built backwards. Here's why. Here's what I mean.
I love that. Go ahead.
It was built for sales leaders as a management tool, right? And so leadership has to flog and beat the heck out of and threaten the salespeople to put in the information so that they can get the visibility that they're looking for in the business. Had they built it to make the salesperson better, then all of the data would be in there and they'd get the result that they want, right? And again, this is such a, it mirrors sales, right? If we think about, well, this is what I need, right? I show up with my commission breath and I tell you the deal that I need to get. I'm not getting that deal. It's the same thing. If I show up with my software and I'm like, I need you to put in this stuff for me, nobody cares about that. That's not going to happen. But when I show up for the customer, I'm like, I'm here for you. I'm here to help you get what you want. We win. And if we build software for the person that's using that software to make them better, to help them thrive, to be two or three times better than they are by themselves, magically, all the data's in the system. And we have all the visibility we ever wanted in leadership.
I do so much sales training myself. And I literally, whenever I walk in the room, I write on the board, nobody cares. That's the first thing I write. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about your product, your service, your solution. They only care about their own situation and their problem and need be, because they want to grow. They have challenges. And like I said about Zig Ziglar, like, I love him. Service, solve problems, make sure they're satisfied. It's that simple. People complicate it. Software companies complicate it. So in order for a salesperson to be great at sales, the first person he has to sell is himself on the product or service. Otherwise, he's never going to be able to sell anybody else.
You know, John, one of the things that took me, I was so surprised when I started Sales Success Stories, right? I set out with the goal because I got frustrated by, I'm like, I've consumed so much information. I'm a constant student of sales. I'm always trying to get better. But I wasn't hearing enough from the people who were at the top of their game right now today. And as I started this journey, as I started having these conversations, I had wrong stereotypes in my head. One of the things I thought was that these top salespeople would have giant egos and it was all about them and they would do anything to anybody to get their deal. The reality is the very best sales professionals on the planet care the very most about their customers and their success. And all of the other stuff, their W-2, their earnings, their commissions, their position on the leaderboard, all of that comes as a natural outcome of taking care of their customers. They are the most humble, selfless people. I mean, heck, they're willing to give 2 hours typically of their time to talk to me and share their stories. And when I started the show, people told me, Scott, this will never work. These people, they're so busy. They're so focused on sales and themselves. They're never going to talk about what they're doing. 1,000% wrong. It's all about service. In fact, when we did the first Sales Success Summit, so I bring these folks together. We do a 2-day event in Austin each October. And the only people I put on stage are the people who've been on the podcast. So it's all top performers. And the theme that came out of the first couple of years was this idea of servant leadership. You talked about it. You talked about leading from behind. I think of it as leading from the field. I coined the term. I'm really proud to call myself an intentional individual contributor, right? I don't want to manage a team. I love working directly with my customers, but that doesn't mean that I can't have a leadership role inside my organization. It doesn't mean that I can't help my peers and my colleagues get better. It doesn't mean that I can't help my marketing department by bringing insights from our customers and stories from our customers that are going to help us market better, right? I can lead by bringing ideas to our product and development team from customers. Like, I've heard this problem, this challenge, I have three major customers all trying to solve. If we build the solution, we'll be able to help them. My clients win, my companies win, everybody wins.
And you're doing it, you know, not everybody writes a book, and writing a book is not easy. I got to tell you, I've been writing The Sales Machine Playbook, how to build and scale a sales team to millions. And I've been writing it for 10 years. Like, literally, there's revisions to the point where I just got to put it out there. That's just reality, right? That's taking leadership right there. And I want to go deeper into the book. And, you interviewed 60 top sales professionals that are real relevant and creating results right now. Tell me about how that's influenced you and allowed you to skill up your skills to manage a $3 million pipeline.
Yeah, I can't even tell you. Yeah, there are so many impacts. But first, here's the dirty little secret about the book. I'm like the Tom Sawyer of authors, because I had my friends write 95% of that book for me. And I just put the stories together. But I love that, right? And it goes back to what we've been talking about thematically, is it's about shining the spotlight on other people. The more you help other people win and get what they want, you get the things that you want. But the impacts of, I mean, at this point, I'm 100 and I've lost count of how many episodes, 180 interviews into Sales Success Stories that I've talked to these top performers. And what you know as a podcast host, you really get to know people when you have these conversations, right? The real magic happens before and after we press that record button, right? There's a lot of real deep truth that comes out after we have that conversation. It's part of the reason why I built the event, right? I wanted them to have an opportunity to connect with each other and for my audience to be able to go even deeper and really start to build these relationships. Jim Rohn, another fantastic leader, fantastic thought leader. He says that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. I believe that. I heard that my entire career. But it wasn't until I started this podcast that I really started to act on it. And it is so real, right? Because it changes your level. It changes your expectation, right? One of the things I think is really interesting with top performers is the relationship that they have with quota. It's almost irrelevant, right? On average, these top performers are setting their goal at three times their number and then working backwards to figure out, what do I have to do to get to three times my number, right? So if I'm supposed to sell $1 million a year, how do I sell three? What do I need to do to make that happen? And then if they miss by half, oh, they only sold $1.5 million, they still outperformed everybody else by 1.5 times. So so much of it is mindset. Here's the thing. It has very little to do. You would think after all these interviews, hundreds of hours of conversations, not just on the podcast, but one off over these last many years, you would think I would have found the secret sauce, the silver bullet. There isn't one. Everything is so much more fundamental, right? It's more about the mindset. It's more about your habits and your behaviors and the things that you consistently do. It's not because I say this one thing at this one magical point and then everybody whips out their pen and they sign my contract. It's not how it works. When you're great at sales, the signing of the contract is so anticlimactic and so just kind of part of the routine, because great salespeople recognize that that's just one step about two-thirds of the way through the process. But I need to make sure after they sign that contract that they get what I told them they were going to get. That was the reason why they signed that contract.
Yeah, you know, Scott, it's refreshing because, you know, there's so many people out there talking about closing and being a great closer and closing the deal. And it's not a close. It's a beginning. Like, it's the beginning. The work isn't even done. You made a sale. You made a sale because you made a friend. And it's the beginning. Now it's the beginning. Like a lot of your sales right now, you're like, I don't even have to prospect, John. I literally have so many opportunities in my pipeline because of the relationships I built over 20 years.
We have so much backwards language in sales. The fact that we call it a close is a problem, right? That indicates like that's the end. To me, That contract signature, that's the start. That's the beginning of the real relationship. And if I do great in delivering that relationship, they're going to buy again. They're going to buy more. They're going to refer their friends. I'm going to turn that one opportunity. And you talked about this before. You talked about just the transactional nature of sales. Well, if you take a more holistic view, that $100,000 isn't just a one-time thing like, okay, on to the next day, I have to start completely over. That $100,000 turns into another $200,000 and then $300,000, and then they introduce you. That one relationship, that one opportunity might be worth $2 million over the next 2 or 3 years if you execute after they sign the contract.
Yeah, which is the beginning. Like we're talking about, it's the start, you know. For my salespeople, and they listen to this podcast, I want them to understand that it's not about how much we sell. It's about how much we can help our clients sell. It's about how we can automate scaling their sales teams so that they get value. I mean, a lot of people don't really talk about value. And I was actually, you know, I was a friend, Bradley, and I actually went and met Alex Hormozi in Vegas at his headquarters. Alex is a guy blowing it up in marketing right now. You know, he wrote $100 million leads, $100 million offers. And then just connecting the dots, because I'm a sponge, I love to learn. I'm learning from you right now, Scott. And I resonate. And you know, when you resonate and you're relevant, it opens the doors to learning more. One of my greatest favorite quotes I've ever heard is, the mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. Right? So I'm always open, and I've been listening to all of these different people who, you know, Brad owns a software company, Alex owns a software company. They do different things. But for me, it all always comes back to the value proposition, right? And what value do you offer? And why are you unlike everybody else? And I came up with the fabulous framework, right? I listened to lots of different gurus. But I always like to condense things down and make them stupid simple, especially for my tech team, for my sales team, my marketing team. A lot of people talk about features. A lot of people talk about benefits. But it was only recently I heard from Brad talk about advantages, and putting it all together, I came up with the FAB framework. What are you? And because people will talk about features. The geeks will talk about, well, what can it do? What are the features? And then you talk about the advantages, and then you talk about the benefits. That's fabulous. And that's the place and space I want to come from. And just to throw in there, because from Zig, and I love my Zig. I just love Zig. You know, when in service, never nervous. I created that quote from coming off a stage in Japan where I was ridiculed and by the Sony CEO. about how I was dressed and stuff in the first 2 minutes. And then I just came from service and let him know that, hey, you know what? He said, why should I listen to you? Why? I mean, look at you're dressed like, you know, one of my salespeople. You look average. And I just bought a $2,000 Zegna suit, right? And so I was feeling good about myself. And I said, you know what? I absolutely cannot help you if you're not open to help. But I'm here to serve. And if you're open to it, I can show you how I've literally built thousands of salespeople with my process. And then it turned into a standing ovation. And I just never forgot that, you know, when you come from service, never nervous. When it's not about you and you take the ego out of it and what you can get out of it, out of the sale, rather than what you can do and help people, that's the game changer. That's what I don't see a lot today when people are doing sales at the highest level.
Well, let's talk about service. And I know you wanted to talk about software sales as well. And the way that most software is sold these days is it's a subscription, right? It's software as a service. It's interesting. I was in a previous role a number of years ago, and we had a new sales leader come on. It was a relatively small sales team, and he was kind of busting my chops about, you know, why I wasn't kind of the top performer with what I was doing. And one of the things I kind of walked him through was, I'm like, well, let's look deeper into the numbers, and let's look at the real, true value that's being delivered to the organization. When you serve your customers well, it's about making sure that your solution is the right fit, which means sometimes you have to tell people, you know what? This just isn't going to be the best solution for you. There's probably something else. And that's so important in software, where the company doesn't even make money typically until the second or third year of that relationship. Because the first year, they got to pay me, right? They've got to pay the sales staff, and they've got to implement, they've got to set everything up. There's a lot of cost in setting up software in that first period of time. And what I walked through was, let's look at my deals and the longevity and the fact that they are on the website, you know, writing testimonials, referring us to other customers, they're renewing consistently, they're getting a ton of value. The quote unquote number one guy at the time, 60% of his deals had churned. So they're paying him to bring on a customer, and it's not a good fit. The cost of the organization is so high, and people don't recognize this. And I'm not just talking about, oh, well, they signed the deal and then they left, and so we lost out on money. No, I'm talking about reputational damage. Now that customer is pissed off, right? They invested all this time, all this money, and they got nothing from it. They have to start over. They probably have to spend more money to get the solution they probably should have had in the first place. And now they've lost years of time. It's a cluster. What is that company going to say about you and your software and your firm? The cost is so extraordinary. And yet we don't think about this. And I think this can be a failing in leadership. Is any revenue is good revenue? Absolutely not. Like, you have to think holistically.
Oh, you hit it on the head. That's failed leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, really focusing on, and Salesforce did a great job of this. I don't hear them emphasizing it quite as much as they did a number of years ago, but they had this whole customers for life initiative. That's the game right there. How do we bring on a customer and make them so happy and so successful that they never leave? That we, again, I talk about that big deal I did 10 years ago. That deal has generated millions and millions of dollars in revenue and hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of dollars of value to the company I sold it to. That is the game. That is real value. And that's the thing we have to be mindful of. This is another example of what I think of as leading from the field. You have to do the right thing. And sometimes that means telling a customer, you know what, that we're just not the right fit. You're trying to do something different than what we're great at delivering. And maybe I can introduce them to another solution, but I'm certainly doing them a favor in walking away. And it frees up my time to serve my customers that I really can help.
And you still maintain a great relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they're going to come back. Now I've developed trust. They're like, hey, Scott, you couldn't help us before. We found another solution for that. Now we have a problem that we think you can help us for. You're absolutely right. They come back around.
Things today are changing faster than ever before. And there's a lot of companies out there that are just starting out. And I've been in the sales game for 30 years. But my original company, Optimal, we're still in business. But the sales machine as a software is as a service is a startup. So what advice would you give the sales machine? Like if you're just now starting out scaling a software, what would be your approach?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked about a lot of it, right? I think the most important thing, the metric I care the most about is quality conversations. Right? It's not how many outreaches or how many cold calls or any of that stuff. It's how many really strong, relevant conversations can I have? And if I really spend the time, I had a great guest on the podcast a couple of years ago. And she said, discovery is a lifestyle, not a stage. Right. There's not this like one conversation in the sales process where you ask a lot of questions and you listen really carefully. And then the rest of the time you drop that. You're always asking great questions. You're always listening. And the more that you're able to do that with your customers, with your prospects, with the organizations that you're working with who can potentially benefit from your software, the better you can understand them and make sure that that fit is really there. That's where the value is. I mean, that's where you're going to deliver success. And in working with your sales team, right? Helping them understand the value of these things and that it's okay to say no and help a customer understand, look, this just isn't the right fit based on what you're trying to do. Like, these are the things that we're great at. This is where we're going to deliver value. The better that is aligned, the more success is going to start to snowball.
100% agree. And, you know, I'm fine with sending them to a potential solution that's not even a referral for me. I just want to be about helping people. And that's what the sales machine is all about. We're about empowering organizations to scale their sales teams and automate it. We're a new tech. A lot of people don't understand sales performance management. You know, and so it's definitely been a challenge for us to get out of the CRM game. I mean, CRM is like you have an arm, but you're not your arm. Do we have a CRM in our system? Of course. So does everybody else. But it's no big deal, right? We're a sales performance management. That's our value proposition. And I came up with the fabulous framework for people to understand what are the features, the advantages, and the benefits, because that to me is fabulous. So they know, is that a solution that's going to be valuable to them? But technology is changing. AI has come, Scott. And so how do you see emerging technologies right now reshaping sales and AI becoming replacing salespeople?
I love this. I mean, I have been in technology my entire career, right? So a couple of decades in this space, and you know, sold marketing automation, which you would think, well, that'll replace people. The thing is, what it does is replaces unimportant work, so that you can elevate and you can be more human. Salespeople are never going to be replaced. But there are parts of the process that could be streamlined, but it's really about the thing that is not going to go away is that relationship and somebody really helping and caring to have the conversation and figure out how do we actually make this work. AI is not going to do that, right? It's a great tool. It can do a lot of things. The best way to use it is a way to enhance your capabilities, right? It's a great way to accelerate and streamline your research, right? So that I can prepare faster and have a more valuable, more relevant conversation. I don't have to spend nearly as much time as I needed to before. I use ChatGPT to read the 10Ks and the annual reports of the organizations that I work with and encapsulate that and connect it to the solutions that we solve. So now it's super on point. Now I'm speaking directly to, these are the top three initiatives that your CEO is trying to knock out. Here's how we can help impact that for you. Here's how that impacts your career. If we can deliver on this solution in this way that provides provable value to the organization, like what is that going to do for you and your value inside your organization, right? It's those things. But the human, and that's the thing we have to lean into the most, right? Something that AI or can do or that can be automated, let it do that. Lean harder into the things that make you the most human.
I love it, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, life is a team sport. And, you know, AI is not going to be your buddy. It's your bitch. It's your co-pilot. Yes. And you can use it to be a power tool. A lot of the redundant work or the connecting of the dots, like you use it, that could take you 20 hours to connect all those dots and allow that research to be in alignment with the solution you have. It's brilliant advice, Scott. So tell me, what's next for you? What's your next goal?
You know, I've gotten into just a really great place, right? Like I love my day job. I love the clients that I work with. I love the impact that I'm able to make through Sales Success Summit and the podcast and all of these things and just helping inspire other folks. And I'm at a stage in life. I just got back from probably the final set of college tours with my oldest daughter. I have two daughters. My oldest is a senior. And so we're making kind of the final decision on what's the next college. And I had the very stark realization that, wow, this is about to come to an end, right? So I'm doubled down on kind of the family and those relationships right now, because man, they're short-lived, at least the time that I have with them under my roof. So I'm enjoying every minute of that and, kind of living in the moment, if you will.
Hey, I love it. I love being a dad. My boy just turned 6. I only have one and he just turned 6. And like, he's absolutely the most important thing or person in my life. And I've never thought I could ever get such joy out of just watching him grow and being a dad, like to the point I'm kind of annoying to other people, right? Because I just love being a dad, right? We just went to his Taekwondo class, you know, and he's 6, right? He got his high yellow belt. It's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy that time. And so if people need advice, they can go and they can check out your podcast. Sales Success Stories is the book, right? Daily sales tips. Scott, if people wanted to work with you, do you make that available to people?
Not directly. So really get involved through the podcast. You can plug into if you are an individual contributor. We do have a Sales Success Society. There's kind of an online group of folks that come together to support each other that has kind of come out of the annual Sales Success Summit that we do. Best thing to do, go to top1.fm, T-O-P, the number 1.fm. You'll find links to the podcasts, the books, the event, all the stuff. That's a great jumping off point. And I would love to hear from you. I may not be able to work with you individually, but I'm happy to have a conversation if you want to drop me a note in LinkedIn or shoot me an email.
Scott, keep being an amazing human, man. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's been a blast. Thanks, John.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to send a review about what you liked on this podcast or share it with somebody who would need it to definitely improve their business, building and scaling sales teams, do me a favor, like, share. It means a lot to me so that we can help others grow and live in abundance.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for joining me today. And if you got value from this episode, do me a favor, like, subscribe, and refer a friend. And if you want even more value, go to thesalesmachine.com, click on resources, and there's tons of resources there to increase profits and drive performance in your business. Ride on, come on.